Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schampelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. You know, I just had a thought. I should have changed it up on you and said, hi, this is welcome to Speaking of Reliability. And my guest today, or my co-host is Kirk Gray. And I would have wondered what you would have done if I would have changed up our pattern this, at the start.
It would just throw me off completely. I wouldn't know what to do.
Well,
but you're right. We have certain expectations, certain patterns we expect. And you were just telling me about your internet dropout this morning. And made you end a webinar.
If it would have failed yesterday at 8:25 or 8:30 when it failed here, 20 minutes before the webinar starts, I don't have a connection. And, if it would have been yesterday, it's a nice day. I'm going to go out in the garden, do some weeding for an hour, and maybe it'll be back up later. But no.
It needs to fail between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning. That's when it needs to fail, if it has to fail.
That's right.
No, you're right. Our expectations of reliability of any system and any product of any kind of service or product or, is based on really what we've experienced and what we expect from our experiences with other, with that product or that type of product.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all gotten extremely dependent on the internet access, because like I said to you recently, that all my services, television, internet, email, everything is through the DSL connection I have.
Does that include your landline phone too, or do you just use cell phones?
I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a landline phone, but we use because I get a very poor cell signal. They use Verizon, and most phones now can use a Wi-Fi assist, where you're actually connected to the Wi-Fi, and it helps go through the internet for a call. I think maybe a VoIP type kind of system or mesh. I don't know how that exactly works.
Yeah, I had one of those for a while, and then they put up another cell locally, so my cell phone's way better than going through the Wi-Fi part. But it's that expectation, and for you, you're counting on that Wi-Fi connection for entertainment, and if you're doing any work with a client, or if you're on the phone, all kinds of stuff. That
right?
Yeah. Whereas 15 years ago, I remember, or more than that, 35 years ago, my dad says, here, go grab the antenna and move it to the left. All right, that's good. Don't move.
Right. And of course, I come from the days of in college of having an acoustic coupler. I know kids don't know what that is.
it was great when you got up to 300 baud, you could get all the way up to, it would, to load one email today would take 3 hours.
I know. And your little green, letters would come up, at every 1 second, across the screen. So for the younger generation, this is, it is amazing. Our expectations have grown with what we've experienced and what new technology. For instance, cars, I remember my parents' cars being problematic and in the shop all the time.
My dad would get a new car every 2 years just because he didn't want to mess with it.
I know. And now they're giving, 5-year warranties and 100,000 miles. I don't know what your opinion is, but I definitely feel cars are extremely reliable. I expect every time I go out there to turn the key and it starts.
Well, that's availability. You got to be careful there. That's availability. Okay. The reliability is that it'll get you to the store and back.
Right.
But you're right. When I learned how to drive, the first thing my dad said was, all right, we're going to change the tires.
Exactly.
Because you're going to need to know how to do this. And he was right. I needed to know how to do that.
Yeah. And tires still get punctured for sure. I've had it happen.
Oh, yeah.
But
not as often.
Not as often. And in fact, nowadays, the nice thing on the car is the sensor, you know, things that give you warnings.
Yeah.
And now almost all cars have a air pressure sensor on each tire.
Yep.
So not only do you know which tire is low, but if you're having a slow leak, you get to know that. Otherwise, it would have been up to somebody yelling out a window, hey, your tire's getting flat.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Or you come out in the morning and it's flat, or you're down on the, you're on the highway going around a corner and it blows out, and that can be really dangerous.
Right. So we've added a lot of sensors to give us a status or a continuing monitoring of the systems that help us.
Now the problem is we have so many sensors and so many chunks of silicon and gallium arsenide in it. We can't buy enough of them. They're shutting down factories. The news of this last week or two has been GM is shutting down, Ford shutting down, Toyota's doing okay, but I think they make their own or something. But yeah, it's just, yeah, it's
a really shortage right now. And it's not easy to gear up, as I've worked in semiconductor fabrication, working on ion implanters and thin film deposition, that it's not easy to gear up a fab. It's quite a complex system.
Well, you know, and so's this internet thing we deal with. And, you know, and I thought I had a backup. Right. A smart, intelligent, upstanding. I feel tall now when I say that about myself. I had my phone, and I have a cell, which is a separate medium to connect into, or second path to connect to the network. And this phone was working. And so I tethered it to it, but it had, but now the Zoom webinar package I was using was expecting some minimum amount of bandwidth, right? Mm-hmm. Which is way above what my phone tethering system can do.
Yeah.
So now I learned that my backup system also wasn't any good. So now I got to figure out another route to get a reasonable backup. Because where I live, it's not unusual that we lose internet. You know, it's once a quarter, maybe, you know, and we'll go 6 months or a year without any problem, and then it'll... They're working on the lines, or a tree falls down, or we've had cars hit poles and they drop the line, or, you know, variety of different reasons. But it's one of those things where it's often enough. It's like where I live too is in the winter, because the trees knock out the power lines, we'll lose power. And now with the wildfire threat, they'll turn off the power preemptively so that we, the power lines don't cause a fire, you know, when it becomes windy and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's like a lot of people here are putting in generators to keep their refrigerator cold and power their internet stuff in their house. And then they find out that the local internet service, whatever method is used, has a power requirement for the local hubs. Local spots along the network have to be powered. And so if the grid goes quiet, they only have so much battery time, and then they go quiet. So even if you have a generator so your kids can still go to school, you know, on the internet, you just can't get there from here.
No, kind of thing. It's difficult to, you know, like I know a lot of people in Texas now bought generators too. You know, whether they're going to need them or not.
Yeah. So they should pay for their power system, you know, to actually work. It's not a short term problem though. But become expectant that you put a plug into the wall and the lights come on. You flip a switch on your computer and it connects to the internet. You go to Starbucks, you get good hot coffee, if you like Starbucks coffee, and an internet connection. You know, it's just standard now.
It is everywhere. Almost everywhere you get an internet connection, free internet. And, you know, we are becoming extremely dependent, and I'm glad to see the U.S. government is making internet access priority for a lot of people, because it is becoming very dependent. We're all becoming very dependent on that as a communication tool, as well as the cell phone.
Do you still have a ability to send a fax?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. You know, that's an interesting, funny thing that, you know, faxes are still around, but I can send a fax through the, you know, computer fax through fax kind of, you know,
through a website.
Yeah, through a website.
You could put a PDF document into a browser, upload it into some site someplace that then faxes it for you, and it's all right. Done electronically.
Yeah, and I don't know anybody who actually has fax machines sitting around. I guess some medical offices sometimes still do. I don't know.
Well, not a dedicated one. There's the all-in-one printers that copy to this other thing. You can set that up to do faxes if you run a phone line to it.
Yeah, but I don't have a phone line.
Yeah.
You know, well, I have no you just can't line, do it.
You're
so...
just breaking the system here, Kirk.
Yes, technology moves on. And so again, a lot of fax machines are working today, but they'll be they're technologically
obsolete.
You know, obsolete, yeah. And that's again another reason I say that you got more life in most electronics than you'll ever need to use. And
well, part of that though, Kirk, is yeah, that evolves, Kirk. You know, the very first printers were terrible. I remember my first dot matrix printer; it would vibrate right off the table.
Oh yeah, yeah, and, yeah. There are a lot of mechanical parts in that.
Oh, I know, but it would print, and I remember, you know, being able to print stuff that nobody else could, and you know, and I was kind of the early adopter of that kind of tech, and I was like, this is cool, and. In college, it became really handy because then I could print out 5 copies of my term paper or, you know, essay or whatever and give it to 5 people to proofread. And and rather than just bugging one person or even not doing it, which most people didn't do. Because if we were doing it on a manual typewriter, you know, making 5 copies was a real chore.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, our expectation.
Daisy wheel. Remember the daisy wheel?
Oh, yeah.
That really shook.
Yeah, it did. But the idea was is that part of it is that there's somebody made a printer and said, well, you don't have to go to a print shop to get this thing made, and you don't have to pay $1,000 setup fee to do this. We're enabling this feature. And then the people were like, well, that's cool, but I'm not spending $2,000 for that. Who needs to print? And but now it's you basically
printers are cheap.
Printers are cheap, and if you need something, you just expect. But I don't think twice about, you know, I need to print something to sit down and review it, or I want to get like for a tax record, I want to print it and put it in my folder, you know, stuff like that. I just do it. Whereas 20 years ago, it was like, I don't know if I can do that.
Right. You had to think about it. And, but yeah, it's really nice. You can print beautiful photos, enlargements, and things like that on your printer. And it's, very high quality, especially now the cameras with the high megapixel quality and and the smartphones. It's just, you know, technology moves on and we expect all of it to work because we've always, you know, our experience is it works all the time. And that's what, you know, again, our expectations for reliability and availability are based on what we've experienced with the technological advances that, you know, there's more sensors to monitor the condition of the car and warn us of things before it actually becomes a failure, you know, before it becomes.
Exactly. And there's also more resilience in some of these networks type systems that we use in different ways that we communicate and entertain and do all in transportation. Oh, we have so many options. I mean, if my car doesn't start, I can call AAA, see if they can come out, get it going, right? Or I can call Uber or Lyft, I can ride share, or I can call a taxi, or I can call you and say, hey, Kirk, can you come on over and give me a lift? It might take you a while
Except
to get out here.
To drive, California from Colorado.
Yeah, but we got options.
No, Uber has certainly opened up as a, you know, transportation availability so you're right. We've got options. And so, you know, it's, again, our expectations of how reliable a system or how we can depend, how dependent we become on a system is based on its reliability and our experience with that system. Mm-hmm. So as systems become more reliable, our expectation starts to climb.
It's a ratchet.
Get really frustrated when it fails. Like you're your internet, and it's getting better all the time. But you know, new technologies, I hope. Do you have fiber optics there?
I don't. It's not to the house. No, I don't know if it's I don't know if it's up here in the mountains. I know some of this areas down in the valley have gone fiber in the street, and it's always been the problem: is how do you get it fiber to the house? Because it's a bit trickier to do that. But even with copper, though, they're getting 2 gigabyte speeds now with all kinds of voodoo magic that they do on top of the signals. But I think it's a natural ratchet in so many technologies. Now, here's an exception, though, Kirk. Now, when you get your electric scooter and you get on the racing circuit, you're probably going to thin out the tires so there's not as much rotating weight so you can go faster. But when you do that, I'm using the analogy for road bikes that, you know, like the Tour de France type bikes. They are not reliable. They will work that day and then they're overhauled. They really are. And they change the tires and do everything on it. Same with like the Formula One cars. They're just reliable enough for the race, and that's about it. And it's because they very carefully engineer out the weight, because that helps performance. So it's a trade-off. We're going to be on the edge of being good enough to finish the race, but we also have all these advantages of less weight and higher performance and all these other things. So there are cases in some situations where you want just enough reliability, and it's a risk you take, and it's a very conscious risk. Whereas I think some of our ratcheting up of the expectations is that we're not willing to take the risk of, well, I don't have internet today. You know, like I was expecting, my expectation was I get up this morning, I get on Zoom, I do the webinar, we'd have a great discussion, I get the recording, and I'll be good.
But they could, you know, they could also do something like lower the speed of your internet, and it would probably have an impact on its ability to, you know, be reliable too. Again, when you're pushing the boundary, like in a race car, you're making all kinds of trade-offs. You don't want extra weight of, you know, the extra tire treads, even though you could go longer before you needed tire changes, which would save you time in the pit, whatever. You know, you balance all that. And we do that with the cost of almost everything in reliability, adding a titanium shield to our smartphones. Certainly would cost more, also add weight and become more, but it would make it a more reliable phone, possibly.
We keep changing stuff. I mean, making it more and more water resistant, making it more drop resistant, and all these different things are, but they're, it's a balance.
It raises the expectation, though, what we expect from new products now. Yeah. And, you know, pretty soon people are going to say, oh, you know, somebody say, oh, I dropped my phone in the bathtub or the sink or water in the pond. Well, pick it up, take it out,
shake it off.
What's you know, where are you worried? Because you know, we now expect, I expect most phones to be waterproof, relatively water resistant.
Nothing
is water.
Given my ability to do water skiing, I am not taking my phone out there to do a TikTok video. I'm just not doing that.
I still, it's not going to be doing underwater pictures with mine, you know, although there are cameras that are, I think they're starting to evolve to that. You know, completely sealed that you can go down and take a picture diving or whatever.
But there's, I think the idea though is that some failures, and this is one of the things I learned very early on, is one of the roles of a reliability engineer is to also consider, are we going to the right specs? Is this meeting the customer's expectations? And I think this came from the quality side of my background, where it's, you know, the voice of quality and what does the customer expect? What's the marketing finding out? What are the customers saying? What kind of complaints are we getting? Because if half of your field failures are, it was a bad color. Even though the color applied met the spec, it's still a return. It still costs us money. And I called that a reliability issue, and because it cost us money for a return. So we got that wrong. We need to fix that, which is the same as, hey, my internet went down because a branch took out a cable or something. I have no idea what the root cause of this morning's problem was. But the understanding and meeting the expectations of, well, it works for 10 years, or it starts every morning, or it's the right color, I think are all relatively equivalent in the eyes of the customer. It's got to work the way I expect it to work. And when it doesn't, it's a failure. And I think that's a more subtle part of reliability engineering. It's you got to make sure that the what you're testing to or what you're evaluating or experimenting with or doing whatever actually is meaningful for the customers. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're kind of blending the quality issue and reliability that certainly if it's the quality or the paint comes off or whatever, it's still functional, it still works, but you know, it's not meeting the customer's expectations. And you could call that to some degree maybe a failure to meet the customer's expectations.
Well, I look at it as, and that might be a subject for another discussion, is, but if it costs the company money after we ship the product to somebody, then I call that a reliability problem. Now, some companies say if it's returned in the first 30 days, we're going to classify it as a quality issue. And different people get to play with it. And then they usually call me anyway as a reliability guy going, hey, we don't understand this failure mechanism.
That gets into the problem of a C&D cannot duplicate problem. Yep. You know, where they mix everything together. So then it dilutes the actual not functional, you know, the products that come back and have actually a failure or intermittent failure in them. And that makes it more difficult to isolate the problem and, you know, selectively understand one particular dominant mechanism unless you do a Pareto of unless you analyze what's coming back and not dump it in there. But I can understand. This morning I threw out, I just bought a off the internet a little USB-C charger. I don't know if you're familiar with now, the C is a higher wattage USB-C. It's on my Oculus Quest headset as an input. And I think it's like 15 watts instead of 5 watts for charging. Okay. So anyway, I buy this thing and I think I dropped this, you know, little AC, some people call it a wall wart, you know, the little plug that you put in a wall, and it failed. I mean, it's a little tiny, you know, 2-inch by 1-inch thing, and it normally can get dropped all the time. And, you know, I noticed it's failed. So, do I send it back? Do I look in the Amazon and say, okay, this is a warranty issue because I only had it a month and a half, 2 months. I had no outside damage to it. Or do I just toss it because it was, you know, $15 or something? And do I want to hassle with that? So,
well, I'm surprised you haven't taken it apart yet.
And that's another thing. Those things are not made to be.
No, they're molded and closed. Yeah,
exactly.
They don't want you sticking your fingers in there. Yeah, no.
Nobody can troubleshoot.
Well,
that.
You could. You got a Dremel tool. You can cut that thing open. But
they need to do that.
They need to do that, and it's so for the good.
But
of
they won't get it back.
No, they won't. No, they won't. So the idea here, though, is and if you're listening to this, and hopefully, you know, you were on the webinar this morning and saw that what happened and saw the recording and joined the discussion group, that by the time this episode comes out, all of that should have happened. So I'm doing a different kind of workaround. But in your world, you know, if you're listening to this, what are you dependent on? And as good reliability folks, you know, do you have backups and workarounds and other ways to deal with those systems? But have you noticed in your own products or your own life is how our expectations for reliability just continues to increase, especially as we continue to have good performance and improved performance, and the next generation should be better. Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you can find a comment form there that we'll get and love to hear from you. You can also find Kirk and I and the other hosts of the show on Ascendo's About pages, or you can find us on LinkedIn. I think everybody's up on that. And as always, Kirk, you know, I know you enjoy hearing from folks, and I certainly do too. So highly encourage everybody to get in touch.
Yeah, well, we certainly thank all those for listening, and please send us your questions so we can help address whatever you're wondering about with reliability.
Or quality, or safety, or risk. you know, let's keep it technical.
We'll keep it technical.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Fred. Talk to you soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.